Hause.
Und da sind jetzt hier hinter der Kante. Ja.
Putting a lot of resources in addressing backlogs,
from the province. You have just now, with these adjustments, and with discussing with the researcher what this really means, you have just been allocated 700 million, which we understand that is going to grow over MTF to 5 billion. To address that, how is the spending going to be managed? We last time you were not here, we were with the other gentleman, forgot the name. We had a lot of discussion about that. The government is making a lot of infrastructure resources available, but what is the state of readiness of the department to deal with this infrastructure? I don't know, or we don't know, as a committee, that if now we approve with the 700 million, unallocated 700 million for infrastructure, what are you going to do with it? If you're not going to be able to utilize it, you haven't planned for it, what do we do about it? I think the main issue, obviously, we do know that generally, as far as infrastructure spending is concerned, there are challenges from provinces. I think there are challenges. Now, with more resources, being carried. And these resources obviously are unnecessary. What are we going to do about them? But there are areas which maybe may not be direct for this committee, but obviously because we're dealing with the resources, we have an interest in the output of those resources. We had a meeting the other day with the Human Science Research Council, which also confirmed that South Africa is really investing a lot as far as the resources in education is concerned, the investment. But the outcomes or outputs for that don't really correspond. There is a disjunction. Now, I'm sure the Committee of Education, Portfolio Committee, obviously, you might be dealing with this with them, but we're not the ones called, they're not the only ones who are interested, because if we have to approve resources, at least we must know that these resources, this investment is really getting somewhere. The other area maybe that you would need clarity on, which also is being raised, is that the reasons for the kind of outcomes that we're getting could be that maybe our focus is on the metric results. But now, if we're focusing on the metric on the last year, then it means that we have a challenge. We would be interested, for instance, in understanding that what investment is being done from the early childhood development side, so that because the research, I would say, shows that he's saying that if the kids are taught earlier, then they have a chance at least affirmed quite well up to the Vatican. Other than that, the other issues maybe which I thought that you would cover would also look at the feeling of vacancies. I don't know, I'm sure the Minister of Finance, you did hear him in the presentation when he says that the expenditure on the wages is also is one of the fastest growing items. But again, if we look at the expenditures, personnel is spending quite well. Right? You don't know what is this investment going to, because we're not getting value, you know, for this investment on the other side. So I would really request you, DG, to take us through after having introduced your team. We have a lot of departments that you may see around here. So our time is very limited. Now the time is quarter past. I would like to give you 30 minutes. If you are still very generous, and then after which then we can engage with your input. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable members of the Appropriations Committee. Thank you for this opportunity. I'll start by introducing the team that's with me. On my left, I have Ms. Mulekwa. I'm proud to say she's not acting anymore. She's been appointed the CFO of the Department of Education. Next to her is Mr. Ferry Bandiachi, who's acting DDG for the Ferry branch. Next to him is Mr. Mpoko, he's the Director of Infrastructure Development. Next to him is Ms. Diali. She's the newly appointed engineer. Mr. Mpoko. Director of Physical Planning. Next to him is Ms. Diali, newly appointed engineer in the department, heading the technical support units, which will become clearer as I make my presentation on infrastructure in respect to her role. And next to her is Dr. Denver Whittle, Chief Director of the Office of the DG. I'm Bobby Subrayan, and DG of Basic Education. Honourable Chairperson, in terms of the brief, we're prepared to present on the adjustments in respect of the appropriations and to speak on infrastructure. However, the Honourable Chairperson raised some very important issues, which I'll speak to briefly. Obviously, they're not in the slides because we haven't prepared for that. And when I conclude that part of the presentation, I'll make a proposal on how we deal with it going forward. And then I'll go into the presentation proper in respect of the adjustments to report on that and on infrastructure in accordance with the principle. Honourable Chairperson, the issues you raised are extremely, extremely important. The big question is, given the level of spending in South Africa, is it appropriate in terms of education? And the answer to that, emphatically, is the comparison to other countries, we spend on the high side as a percentage of GDP. So with regard to adequacy, it's good, and it reflects, from a fiscal point of view, government's commitment to making basic education priority number one. However, the big question is whether, given that expenditure, we're getting sufficient return. And then if you measure return in terms of the key measurement, we can't measure the investment, public investment, in terms of what we put into a sector. We've got to measure it in terms of what we get out of the sector. In terms of schooling, it's about what learner performance is all about. That's the measurement. If you look at learner performance in the country, especially when you compare it to other countries who spend less compared to us, and we had similar levels of economic development, so in other words, the socioeconomic factors, that Sheikh Bana performed are similar or worse in those countries, we do not perform adequately. That's the bottom line. There's no debate about that. Everybody agrees on that. Therefore, it raises serious challenges of what we must do. In regard to provision, we have close to universal participation in a country which, by international comparison, even compared to other industrialized countries, is excellent. We have gender representativity, which is what the EFA and MDGs have asked many years ago, and have a target into the future. We've reached it a few years ago, where we are 50%. In fact, at the moment, in terms of the grades 10, 11, and 12, girls outnumber boys and outperform boys in terms of learner outcomes. We're seeing it in grade 3, 6, and 9 as well. So from that point of view, we're doing well. So on those measurements, expenditure and provision, we're doing well. We're not doing well as a country when you look at results. Therefore, the big question is, what do we do about that? We have, honorable members, at the end of 2009, with the current administration coming in, embarking on the outcomes-focused approach, developed, for the first time really in our history, a plan for the sector, and it's called Action Plan to 2014. Prior to that, we had 9 provincial plans and a national plan, and they didn't speak to each other, and consequently, our impact was given. Now we have a sector plan, and that sector plan is what guides all the APP, budgeting, planning, implementation. That's significant. The other significant thing for me to emphasize is that that sector plan is focused on outcomes and not inputs. What we've identified in the sector plan is learner performance targets from now to 2014 and then to 2025 in grade 3, 6, 9, and 12. We've also identified the number of candidates in grade 12 who have access to bachelor's, and we've identified the number passing mathematics and physics. Honorable Chairperson, you made a point about grade 12 and that it's too late to then try and fix the system. It's for that very reason that the action plan focuses from the foundation phase, which starts in grade R, and therefore we measure performance at the end of that phase, which is grade 3, at the end of the next phase, grade 6, grade 9, and grade 12. Globally, that's been the strategy adopted to improve quality of education. And that's what we're focusing on. I can only speak in Buddha's chairs because this is a very substantive area which I want to propose that we come back and give the committee details on in terms of the plan and the strategy for the sector. So I'm going to speak in Buddha's now. But let me make this point. If a country considers something a priority, it must put money into it, which we've done. But if the state does not have the capability to deploy that money effectively, efficiently, the impact, the outcome of that investment will not be realized. One of the big problems we've identified in the sector is that the capability of the state to utilize that money, execute it according to plan, and try in the greatest probability possible to achieve the outcome is not optimal. And therefore, in our action plan, and you'll see when we present infrastructure, our strategies speak explicitly to improving capability. However, implicit in what the Honorable Chair was saying, even if you have the investment and you have the capability, there's no guarantee you've made the right investment choice, because money is limited. You may not have made the right choice to achieve the outcomes you seek, and that's the third level of measurement. So to repeat, if a country has a priority, it doesn't make the investments we have. For that investment to work, you must have the capability, plan, and execution. We weak there, but we develop the capability there. Thirdly, you must make sure you make the right investment choices, and we speak to those issues. So, Honorable Chairperson, in terms of your question, it's a critical question about the outcomes and the return on spending, and in particular, the emphasis on grade R versus the rest of the sector. We shifted, we're focusing on the rest of the sector. You will see now, as we proceed to the end of the year into January, we are guiding the system, steering, we are much more hands-on in respect of these key interventions that focus across. Our focus going forward, in fact, it started last year, is on the foundation phase, which is grade R, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. We've distributed literacy and numeracy workbooks. We've revised the caps. We're talking of teacher development. We're talking of infrastructure in those areas. And we've become much more hands-on in our work with provinces, not only monitoring, but ensuring that implementation happens. In respect of the ranking fees, Honourable Chairperson, the point you made, there I can say that we had a problem with the splitting of the department. We had to implement a new organogram and only thereafter get the budget approved for it and thereafter filled. So it's been slow in filling those posts, but we're now advertising and we're filling it soon. We've got the chief director, the CFO appointed. And the only reason the DDGs haven't been appointed yet is because it's difficult to mobilize ministers to sit on a panel, which is a requirement for the appointment of DDGs. So we've had to postpone some of those meetings, but it's something we're ready for. We're ready to appoint at the level of DDGs that will go down with that. So we'll give a numerical report on vacancies in the department after we finish today. So Chair, that I think I've attempted to cover the questions you've raised. I concede inappropriately, inadequately, but we can come back. I would request that we do, and we also provide something in writing to the committee. If I can then proceed to the formal presentation, Honourable Chairperson, I'm going to speak in two parts now. One is the spending as of the second quarter, and then infrastructure. I'm aware of my time. I'm going to go a bit quick, but if anything is unclear during question time, we'll get back to that. If you look at the adjusted appropriation, what we've indicated on the screen is firstly what the main appropriation in respect of all of these programs was, the adjusted appropriation, and in terms of the brief we've received, we've given the spending there in the fourth column, April to September 2011, and then we speak about the deviation. You will see that for program administration, the adjustment has gone down. It was 301 million to 299, and then for curriculum policy support and monitoring, 1835 to 1848, and then teachers 521 to 525, certain information and assessment 6.3 billion to 6.578 billion, education enrichment services 4.8 billion to 4.827 billion. In aggregate, in total, our adjustment goes from a main appropriation of 13.868 billion to 14.08 billion. And then expenditure in the first 6 months of 2011 was 6.426 billion, or 45.6% of the adjusted appropriation of 14.08 billion for the whole year. If we then just go and look at the economics, look at it in terms of economic classification, we'll see for compensation of employees there, our main appropriation was 245 million, it's 241 million, and this is for the second quarter expenditure 2011-12 financial year as per economic classification. For examiners and moderators, it was unchanged. For transfer to public entities, unchanged. Other transfers, slight increase there, conditional grants increase there, and then earmarked funds, a slight increase, school infrastructure, backlog grant, that's the CD grant, unchanged, department operations, a slight increase, and then projects, a slight increase. And you see in aggregate there, there's a slight increase between the adjusted appropriation and the main appropriation. And you can see there that in terms of expenditure, it's from 45.64%. Now we look at the details of the earmarked allocation transfers of the 2011-12 financial year and look at now what has contributed to the adjustment. We'll see that in terms of earmarked funds, it's gone from 1.601828 billion to 1.614201 billion. The expenditure in total is 342 a million, and the deviation is 1.2, there, 21% rate. Now, if you look at what is contributed to it, you'll see the category methodology project there, very slight change. EPWP category, no change. Curriculum review, no change of 80 million. The workbooks, no change of 899 million. Integrated quality management system, no change. Systemic evaluation, no change. National assessment, the new one that we managed to get in grade 3, 6, and 9, that for the ELA, which has been widely publicized, NIDU, no change, and National School Nutrition Program that's administering it, changed from 14.4 million to 16.4 million. Then in terms of conditional grants there, it moved from 10.546 billion to 10.736 billion. And you will see there that changes are indicated below that. I'm not going to read all of that because it's a very slight change in each of those areas. I will take us now to go to the next one. I'm going to go to the following slide, which is the details of earmark allocation transferred over the 2011-12 financial year. And you see here, transfers to public entities is largely the same, a very, very slight change there. This is about the expenditure, and you see in terms of the expenditure of transfers, it's a transfer, it happens according to particular dates. So in terms of transfers to public entities, that's on track, and it's in accordance with the transfer schedule that we have there. If you look at the other transfers, UNESCO, we paid at a certain date. It's a UNESCO multilateral contribution. ADIA is also a multilateral organization. Guidance Counseling, Youth Development Center, we made a contribution there. ETDP CETA, in terms of the Skills Development Levies Act, that's our contribution, etc. So this gives an indication of the earmark allocations transfers over that period of time. Now, if you look at the main appropriation against the adapted appropriation for the 2011-12 current financial year, you will see that in administration, largely what's contributed to the changes is environment of 3.4 million, other adjustments of 966,000, giving a total reduction of 2.4 million. And therefore, the adjusted appropriation is 299. Then, in terms of curriculum, policy support, and monitoring, you will see what contributes to the change there is rollovers of 12 million, environment of 4.3 million, other adjustments 2.6 million reduction, and then other adjustments appropriation 13.7 million. That gives us an adjusted appropriation of 1.848 million. In terms of teachers, education, human resources, institutional development, you'll see there, environment, 460,000, other adjustments, 3.3 million, total adjustments, 3.7 million there. Planning, information, and assessment, contributions there, rollovers, 15, environment, of 5.1, other adjustments, 180,000, bringing the total net adjustment to 191,000. And then education, enrichment services there, rollover 1.9, environment 3.7, other adjustments 2.6, bringing the total to 5.9 million there. So the total adjustment is 212 million. The total allocation then to the department increased by 1.53%, which is at 212 million, from 13.868 million. In the main appropriation to 14.080 billion in the adjusted estimate. Included in the 14 billion are transfer payments to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, constituting 3.19%, conditional grant to Provincial Education Department, which is 76%, and other transfers and subsidies, 0.21%. The specifically and exclusively appropriated school infrastructure backlog grant accounts for 4.97%. represent the bulk of the payments for capital assets. The balance of the adjusted estimates consists of earmarked funds, including workbooks for literacy and numeracy, and the Kariguria Mass Literacy Campaign, which is 11.47%, as well as compensation of employees, payments of examiners and moderators, projects and operational expenditure. So that gives you a breakdown of what comes in. Then the overview of the adjusted estimates of national expenditure allocations for 2011-12. If you look here, you will see that for administration, decrease, as I've indicated, for curriculum policy support, increase. And then just to remind you of what I've reported, which composes the 212 million. But if I begin to explain that, you will see in administration, the decrease of 2.448 million is due mainly as a result of the reorganization of the department, with a decrease in the compensation of employees allocated to this program, as well as the shifting of funds towards other activities due to the alignment of underfunded units in the allocation of newly established units. As part of the reorganization, our budget didn't increase commensurate with the implications of the split, and therefore we had to reprioritize our budget to meet our commitments and the shifting of staff. In program two, curriculum policy support and monitoring, the increase of 13.796 million is due mainly to the rollovers of 12.048 million in respect of the technical secondary school recap conditional grant, as well as courier services rendered for the math literacy campaign. The remainder of the increase as a result of the reorganization of the department and the movement of employees, etc. Teacher education, human resources, and institutional development, the increase of 3.768 million is due mainly to the shifting of functions, 3 million in respect of curriculum and professional development unit from one branch to the other branch. And then program 4, the increase of 191.277 million is due to the rollover of 15 million in respect of service providers verifying the capturing of marks for grade 3, 6, and 9 in the annual national assessment, and computer services required for the learner unit record and tracking system, an increase of 180 million, and further being allocated towards education infrastructure grant for disaster management to manage unanticipated expenditure, and that totals 180 million. In terms of education enrichment services, program 5, the increase of 5.939 million is due mainly to the rollover of 1.937 million for the National School Nutrition Program, a baseline study, expenditure we incur, and the remainder of the increase is the result of the reorganization of the department. If I can then proceed to infrastructure in the remaining 10 minutes. On the chairperson, what I have on the screen now is the aggregate figures of infrastructure. This is composed of the transfer we make to provinces in respect of infrastructure grants, as well as the amount that the province itself allocates from its own budget that it gets through the equitable share fund. And you will see here that Eastern Cape, for example, has got a very generous allocation. That's not the CD. What's on the board here is not the backlog grant. I'm going to speak about that separately. This is outside of the backlog grant. Another chair, it's outside the amount you were referring to of 700 million going up to 5.2 billion. This is 8.7 billion is on top of that. So you see there that it's fairly generous. Some provinces have done the right thing. They've taken the grant and they've added from their coffers, which is what you're supposed to do. Others, because their grants coming through provincial grants, have now stopped allocating from the province. And that's a problem. Some like the Eastern Cape have allocated from their budget, but their spending is very low. So if you look at the right-hand column there, you'll see Eastern Cape 18%, Free State 35%, Gauteng 40%, KZN 38%, Limpopo 67%, Mpumalanga 83%, and then Northern Cape 32%, Northwest 44%, Western Cape 44%. Total 43%. Now, everything's fine, but the thing that guides some of the problems within it. Now, let's get into some of that later. Second quarter spending is 3.786 billion, or 43% of the total budget of 8.7 billion. Eastern Cape is the lowest spending department, with a reported spending of only 18%, against expected spending at this stage of about 20%. Now, Gauteng reported spending of 40%. This is an improvement on the expenditure report in the first quarter. However, it's not a satisfactory indication of improvement in spending, as the third and fourth quarter projections are very high and may not be achieved. Mpumalanga and Limpopo, interesting case, have reported overspending as at the end of the second quarter of 83 and 67% respectively. This is a clear indication that these provinces will significantly overspend their total infrastructure budget by the end of the financial year. However, on the chairperson, what we're seeing here is that Mpumalanga had commitments from the previous financial year, and it was planning was set in motion. They're spending now. So using the grant we're giving them now to pay for that thing, which is why they're spending later. And it's a matter we're dealing with at the moment with the province to manage it properly, so we ensure that it just gets in sync and that the spending projection is credible. Given these indications, it's become apparent that while the sector has attained an average of only 7% below the expected 50% at the end of the second quarter. There are those departments that were significantly overspent, if unmediated, we are mediating, but if unmediated, while others were significantly overspent. So underspent or overspent. So this is the education infrastructure grant, Honorable Chair. This is the one where it's a conditional grant that comes to us. We transfer it to the province based on certain conditions, approved plans, etc., and we monitor. And you'll see here the spending rate pattern is very similar to the previous one. This graph is a subset of the other graph. This graph is minus where the province puts in from its own corpus, it's from the conditional graph. And you'll see a similar pattern here. 50% of the EIG has been transferred to PED. Eastern Cape, Free State, Northern Cape, Western Cape has spent below 40% or 30%. There is country transfer, first transfer due in November. Now, anybody will know that infrastructure spending isn't even. It's not like every month you see an even distribution. Because you've got to consider, and then sometimes the expenditure just rises very sharply. So one can't expect a smooth distribution. But clearly, this thing does raise alarm bells, which we're monitoring. The 2011-12 financial year poses an immediate challenge for the sector to implement interventions to manage current spending. As mentioned, some PEDs may overspend while others may underspend. The following is monitored to assist problems. The question is, what do we do? What is DBE doing about it? Effective supervision and oversight in the planning process to ensure that correct needs are identified and planned. Alignment of planning and budget. Adherence to project management principles, including monitoring and projects. Capacity and skills. Procurement, supply chain management. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we've repeatedly confronted this problem, and in fact, in this committee, this matter has been raised on many occasions. What happens when a province is non-compliant with conditions of a conditional grant? What does the national department do? Remember, conditional grants was something we thought of afterwards, and generally, national departments didn't have the capacity to do something when provinces don't comply. We've addressed that problem now, where we've created the capacity in the department to monitor and to intervene where a province isn't complying, where planning capacity is not commensurate. And that's the role that Ms. Diali is playing. Her appointment, her unit, is intended to fulfill that role. She just started, but this is our attempt to create that capacity. In addition to where we've got other mechanisms which I'll speak to. The sector is experiencing significant challenges with planning and capacity to plan at a provincial level. The following are the actions taken by the DBE to assist. DBE has developed an action plan to address the identified gaps and to guide planning in the province. We've developed a design manual. We've now got standard design, so you don't pay a design fee for every school that you plan, etc. A short-term technical assistance team, that's Ms. Diali and company, has been appointed to look at the user asset management plan for PEDs to assist them to develop comprehensive plans and project lists. This is quite hands-on now, it's a shift from what we did before. The team will also be responsible for developing tools to assist PEDs to improve infrastructure planning. In addition to Ms. Diali's team, we've also established a project program support unit within the DBE of specialist built environment experts, engineers, project managers, quantity surveyors, etc. We've contacted them in through tender to monitor the implementation of infrastructure services provision by various professional service providers, implementing agents, that of the DBE and provinces utilizing the EIG or any infrastructure grant. The PNC will also be responsible to continuously track progress on the projects, inspect work in progress, and completed projects to evaluate quality of work, etc. Increased monitoring, planning, budgeting, expenditure, project management, and procurement issues are interrogated, and a sample of projects are visited. Based on the findings from these visits, remedial actions are devised with the province and monitored with the DBE. I should insert here that we're working very closely with the AG in terms of the AG's findings based on the detailed audit they did on infrastructure spending and the findings they came up with regard to the shortcomings in capacity for infrastructure development. Planning is planned on infrastructure procurement and the gateway process as articulated in the CIDB toolkit. This will include officials in the supply chain unit for projects. The following have also been done to improve planning and implementation. We've published guidelines or developed guidelines for infrastructure planning. For example, what's the norm? What do you think a school should look like? And that's a standard design, etc., so we don't pay for these at all times. can we ensure quality, update our information system so we can have proper planning, have the infrastructure planning for prioritization model in place, standardized school designs have been finalized, we released to provinces, a school infrastructure costing model has been developed and will be released to provinces. Honorable Chair, I registered this year now, and I've got to be careful when I speak about this, because you know, very often, government, when you speak about these things, you have a backlash from the market. But you will know, and this committee has probably expressed a view on this matter, that the escalation in cost of school infrastructure has been a serious concern. It's risen beyond what the market would suggest is the inflation of prices. Not long ago, every school cost about 30 million, went to 50 million, now it stands on about 100 million in a very short space of time, which can't explain the increase in input costs and other things. We've also gone to market to assess more or less what is the cost per square meter of constructing a school, based on a whole lot of variables, and we came up with a realistic price. But when we do go out on tender, we get a per square meter cost being provided by all the qualifying generals, which is twice that. And it's a serious matter that we need to get to the bottom of. Your point is government money being used properly. If we simply go that route, we're inexorably escalating the cost of school infrastructure. Currently, and again, I say this with circumspection, and I'm quoting also statements made by other institutions like the Treasury, the AG, and so forth. In some instances, the per square meter to construct a school is higher than that of ours. It's still a physical infrastructure, whereas the materials and so forth that you need and the fittings that you need in a house is probably more elaborate than you need in a school classroom, for example. So we're dealing with this matter, Chairperson. We're dealing with this matter. It's a matter that is clearly there. It's grown. It's had a momentum of its own, and we have to address this matter because as we increase our budget, we're not necessarily getting more at the other end of it all, and we're dealing with the matter very, very strongly. It's a major concern. And now I'm going to speak, Honourable Chairperson, I know my time is up now, I'm going to speak very quickly about the feeding. The PSU, Program Support Unit, has assumed duty from 27th of September. We appointment of contracts for the 50 schools is progressing, according to the table here. 400 bits sold, 150 bits returned. The evaluation committee is constituted by the DBSA, who has DBE representative. The DBSA is the implementing agent. Adjudication committee met on the 14th, and these are the time frames that's indicated on the table. And the CD is the backlog grant. It's primarily this year to address mud structures, predominantly in Eastern Cape, to the amount of 50 schools, mud schools that will eliminate, and then the remainder of the money is for services, water, sanitation, etc. Vula Trust has awarded 18 projects to contractors and 32 additional projects will be awarded to contractors by 4 November. Table below indicated the projected site and over dates, etc. We want to complete this expenditure and this infrastructure development by the end of the financial year, and you'll see the dates indicated there on the table. The IDT is another agency. MOU with IDT is in the process of being finalized. 27 schools in the Northwest have been assessed in terms of services to be provided. ESCOM is helping us with electricity, memorandum of agreement signed. 155 projects are in the planning process. The project cost is estimated at KZN has started with planning process on 30th August and are in the process of implementing 79 projects with water sanitation. 32 of these projects are in the planning stage and 47 are in tender stage, and the dates are given in the table there. Free State then, in terms of water sanitation and electrification, according to the project manager, they are implementing 38 projects for water, 14 for sanitation, 31 for electricity. The timelines are in favor. 2012 and 2013 to 2014, a city. Additional 50 inappropriate schools in the Eastern Cape and 100 schools from other provinces will be implemented in the coming financial. The program support unit will begin with the scope of to this effect and to conclude by mid-December of this year. Eradication, we want to start planning this year for the next financial year already. Eradication of the basic services backlog is targeted for 2012-2013. A criterion is being developed to identify schools which require libraries, laboratories, editing blocks. 12 schools for provinces are targeted based on the money they are available. The balance of inappropriate schools will be eradicated in 2013-2014. That's our other target. Honorable Chairperson, that's our presentation. I do apologize for going on. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. We're here to allow you as well because of the importance of the presentation. Our members, there you are. Well, Panama Mountain, you're with the left. Well,
I have four questions. The first one, Chair, I just want to check. My three questions is focusing on program one. Can I even check that on program one we see the indications that indicates a lot of saving that has been done in that particular program. What I want to know is that the department must be able to help us in understanding whether it is a real saving or it is under expenditure. And if it is under expenditure, why would the department be using the term savings? Because in our understanding, the saving will only occur when the service is delivered, were delivered at the lowest possible cost. And if it is a saving, can then you be able to quantify the savings that have been achieved in that program? And the second question, Chair, is also on program one on the shifting of funds. I think we are observing that the funds have been shifted on the main division, which is far above 8% that is allowed by the PFMA. If I'm not mistaken, it's 19.6% of the shifted funds. So we just want also the explanation as well on why it's such a huge difference. And then we also want to know whether that was also approved, that particular shift, which is so huge, other than the one that is expected according to the PFMA. The third question, Chair. Thanks, Chair, for adding on that one. The third one, Chair, I want to also understand in program one that there are some funds that have been shifted due to the incorrect classification in the 2009 E&E. The assumption is that the department understands the budgeting framework as well as the budgeting principles, and therefore the explanation is required in this regard. Why incorrect classification from the onset? The fourth one, Chair, is on NEDU. We are learning that for NEDU, the department is not doing well on the evaluation unit. And also we see the indication that it is because of the capacity in that particular unit. But the worry is, in terms of what has been targeted, 7,000 schools that were targeted, and the report is saying at this particular moment it's only 49 schools that you have managed to evaluate due to the capacity. And there's an assumption that, if I'm not mistaken, in the third quarter, you will be able to fill up the quota that are required in that unit. Now, the question is, aren't we setting up a situation whereby we, at the look of things, we might not be able, you might not be able to achieve on this in this regard? Because we are already now in the third quarter, and we have not yet, not unless you have, but in this report it doesn't indicate whether we have already started to recruit people to those posts in the evaluation unit, which therefore says as well that when you come back, there will be the rollovers, because in this particular area you might not be making it in terms of the target that has set down. The 7,000 schools, and at this particular moment, you have only evaluated 49 schools. You know, when you look at that, it's the worrying factor. And then, Chair, the last one on grade R. When the GT was speaking in the beginning, he also mentioned that when he was speaking on the issue of infrastructure, I have just a personal concern around the grade R. I remember that even in the HSRC report, it was also indicated that for quality public education, we must be able to start from the foundation. My main worry in this regard is that the issue of infrastructure in the grade R, you will speak of your workbooks, of whatever resources that you deliver, but there is a challenge of infrastructure as well. When you go just to schools, I can mention a lot of schools. You go to schools, and then you look to the conditions of the grade R. They do not have classes, but they are supposed. We are expecting them to produce the quality, because they are the first class to prepare for the formal schooling. But in terms of infrastructure, I think something must be speedily done to address that area. No, thanks, Chair.
You
bring
a lot of constituents.
Must, because, Chair, here I'm able to speak to the expertise in those particular areas.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I think, Chair, you hit the nail on the head in the beginning in your introduction when you said that this committee is really responsible, well, not responsible. We want to know about fund allocation and value for money. We're not interested in the policy of the department. What you do and what you not do is by the way. So having said that, you know, we're not going to achieve equal access to education to all our children in this country if there are such great disparities in terms of infrastructure. You still look at rural areas, semi-rural areas, and urban areas, and it's chalk and cheese. And we're not going to get proper learner outcomes if we cannot solve the question of infrastructure, provision of libraries, laboratories, water, sanitation, etc., etc. And I know it's a great challenge to the department, but what is of concern, and I think this is something we know, is what the DG said about the per square meter cost. Now, isn't there, I'm just asking a rhetorical question, isn't there some kind of collusion between the major service providers? We saw that when the World Cup stadia were being built, where the major guys, and we don't want to mention them, got together and say, you tender for Mabida at 100 million, I will tender 150 million, we will tender for the Port Elizabeth one at 80 million, you tender 120 million, and that kind of collusion. So what we'd like to know as appropriations is, who are the major contractors out there? In different provinces, I suppose you'll get different people, the Marion Robertson, etc., 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 etc. Who are they, and is there collusion? And yesterday, funny enough, I asked this question to the minister in the debate on appropriations about the role of public works vis-a-vis departments. Because there's general complaints from many, many departments about the fact that, firstly, there are long delays when any construction is handed over to public works. There are tender delays. There are all sorts of things that happen. Costs. I don't know if Mr. Subrayan is aware, but in KwaZulu-Natal, we could have classrooms built for about 60,000 to 70,000 rand, because we had private people doing it. The Divine Life Society, the Tower Schools Projects Trust, and things like that, they were building, and they'll build it in 1/5 of the time it takes the Department of Public Works to actually get that building on the ground. Public Works, they'll charge you 250,000 to 280,000 rand per classroom. Now, is there something wrong here between the relationship of the department, and I'm talking generally in the province, departments and public works? Maybe we need to know, from the time the department gets a request for the building of a new school in an area, how long does it take before that school is actually put up there? 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years? And the same question can apply to refurbishment of schools. How long does it take? Because you have planners, they go around, they look at the needs, they prioritize the needs, but then from there what happens? And time costs money. So I think this is a very, very important area within your department that you really need to look at. Because we don't get proper infrastructure to all our children in this country, then we're not going to get the same kind of outcome. I just also wanted to know, Chair, your slides 6 and 7, I think, refer to the same matter, but the figures are a bit different. There's something that you probably a glitch there. Your slides 6 and 7. Then the understanding. Now, the Minister of Finance told us yesterday in Treasury that they are going to be very closely monitoring and getting independent people to evaluate conditional grants. Are people spending, and what do you do when conditional grants are not being spent? For example, let's take any province. If province A is not spending the money, do you reach a point where you say, listen, let's not give them that money and give it to province B, which is spending? But while that may be good for transfer of funds, it's not good for those people in that area, because it's the people, the children and the learners and the educators that suffer when a province doesn't have the capacity. And maybe we need more Eastern Cape kind of intervention. And that's something I think the department needs to talk to us as we move forward within the next 3 months, six months or a year, particularly in terms of infrastructure. Thanks, Chair. I'm only going to concentrate on infrastructure for now.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Sir, with your Eastern Cape, but Eastern Cape says they are the only appointed people, not the teachers. I don't know what you mean. Honorable Sir.
Chair, just to add to what the Honorable Singer said, you know, if one looks at this report of the Auditor General with regard to education and infrastructure build and the problems that you have with infrastructure, you know, it is really a worrying issue. And then we find that the cost of schools, as you say, is going up, DG. Whereas, in fact, at the moment, building costs are coming down. They shouldn't be going up. They should be coming down. Because if you go talk to any ordinary builder, they will tell you that they are getting materials much cheaper than what they got used to get them a year ago. So they should be coming down. So, you know, I would be pleased if you people could investigate that, because surely, if the costs are going up, maybe we need another audit of what's going on. Then just on slide 10, Chair, you will see there that in slide 10, it says the increase of the 13 million is due mainly, this is for the curriculum policy support and monitoring, it says, is mainly due to the rollovers of 12 million in respect of the technical secondary schools recapitalization. Now, that to me is, you know, a very important aspect of education, and that we get our skill development done correctly at technical schools, wherever we can. And then if I look at slide 4, you know, we see that curriculum policy support and monitoring, although it's increasing and there's a rollover, we've only spent 22.82% of our total budget for the first 6 months. And that is really worrying, and can we have the reasons for that?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to agree with my two colleagues, Mr. Sin and Mr. Swart. We had a lengthy discussion yesterday in the Portfolio Committee of Economic Development. And what came out in this particular discussion is that many of the suppliers, especially to government contracts, they find themselves in profound financial difficulty because the payment period is not 30 days, it's usually 120 days or even longer. And the reason that they say that is because it's the finalization of the contract takes a very long time, and that's got a profound effect upon employment in many of the rural areas. And then the second question is, how is the rapport or the contact with provincial departments? As an outsider, I often get the impression that there is often a turf war going on. Provincial departments are very reluctant to liaise with government departments and so forth. And I'd just like to know, have you established a sort of a rapport with them to tell them that the urgency, if you look at the report of the Auditor General, it's frightening to see what happened in health and education and a number of just about all the provinces, the nine provinces. And I think the present situation is untenable, Mr. Chairman, and we have to take some proactive steps to get better outcomes than what we're getting at the moment. I think that the end of the day is that the end user and children and the people in the street are battling because of site red tape and the lack of dialogue between the respective departments. Thank you, Chair. Slow payment. I said that there's no payment.
Thank you, Chair. My question is on slide 13, and then slide 15, and then perhaps other questions about 17. I know that only 18% in the Eastern Cape is spent on infrastructure programs. And I know that there is a technical team looking at the situation. When can we have a report of the technical team? Because it is so important, if you look at this job unemployment are very high in the Eastern Cape, and that is a very sad story, because infrastructure can create a lot of jobs. And then, how many schools, or what is the amount that is set aside for a maintenance of schools of that adjusted budget? What is the amount? And then, what of that amount set aside for the maintenance of schools in the rural areas? And then, what is the position now for January 2012? Are the schools that are in the building process, are they ready? Will we experience again schools that cannot open? And the third question, are the teachers that are supposed to be in the new schools, are they already identified? Or are they already appointed? And then also, are there schools next year that will open without equipment? And what is the amount set aside here in the adjusted budget for this? And my last question is, what is the position of sanitation? That's also what Mr. Swati, Honorable Swat, Honorable Singh asked about the sanitation and electricity, because are they also, in, especially in the great 8 to 12, 7 to 12, did the new schools all have electricity? And is there enough capacity for computers in that school? And is there computers in that school that was promised 2.5 years ago? Thank you, Chair. Besides, what is the amount in that adjusted budget to address the issues that I mentioned earlier? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I want to congratulate the department on their, in the manner that they're dealing with their infrastructure plan at the moment. If I can make a suggestion to the department, with regard to the increase in the square meter cost of provision of infrastructure, I'd like you to do an analysis on the awarding of bids, and I'll almost guarantee you that phenomenon you will work out to see that the lowest bids are not being taken, and officials are awarding tenders way above what the actual square meter cost should be. For what reason? It's up to your imagination. When the tender boards were in place, prior to the PFMA giving the accounting officers the sole responsibility of awarding of departmental budgets and establishment of internal adjudication committees, you'll see that I'm almost sure you'll start to see where that started to spark. And it won't only be for building, it will be for furniture, it will be for books, it will be for everything. But so, the manner in which you're starting to work with the provinces, I commend you. But unless the accounting offices of those provinces are committed to cooperative governance, I don't hold out much luck or much hope for yourselves in actually enforcing the infrastructure plan that you have developed. And I'd like to know, how do you think you can get that right without an amendment to the PSMA, without an amendment to the Constitution to give effect to yourself implementing national policies at a provincial level? Thank you. When your conditional grants are given, and I think most of the PSMA states that payments should be made within 30 days, it's not only the infrastructure that is procured and implemented through the conditional grants, it's also through the provincial budgets, that you find that 30-day period doesn't get complied with and contractors either leave site or they go insolvent.
Yes, not 30
days. Yes, that's the point. Now, how can you enforce compliance with that 30-day provision as well? Thank you.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. So, thanks to the DG for the presentation. A few questions the DG. Let me first start with this, probably what you may characterize as a hypothetical question. On the area where there is a problem, you're saying the province A, province B, province C, there's a problem with the issue of capacity, unable to spend, unable to do what they have to do. If things will change and you are tasked to perform these functions that are unable to perform by the province, will the picture be different? That's the probably you will say, well, we've got a set structure, we've got a way of functions, we can't interfere. But I'm just asking that when we hear about the shifting of parts in terms of we are unable to do this because this one is not necessarily moving this way, as we move forward, they move this way. That's the reason we are unable to perform or do what we're supposed to do. The difficulty in the acceptance of that particular reason, because it's an issue of the issue of leadership and management. The country is a unitary country. It has one set of priorities. It gives money from central. It says this is the earmark. This is what you need to do. And national has to handle, unfortunately, the steering wheel, which is the department here. So, in some degree, I think that we can't just blame the provinces when national is actually dropping the ball. Now, I mean, the issue that you're raising in terms of your presentation, you raised the issue about, you said, we, in terms of the learner performance, we are weak or there is inadequacy. The question is, having identified this as a problem, the intervention to solve the problem in terms of making sure that we have a quality output at the end of the period of cycle of what is a 10-year cycle, which is something that has to start at yesterday already. for you to be able to achieve those kind of results. So this action plan, this Marshall Plan to be able to achieve this result, this is probably an urgent task, more than talking about this, fairly an urgent task in order to do it. Now, I don't know whether in terms of the work that is done at, with an integrated or cluster approach or sector, there is that agency on committing to the task, including the kind of social partners that you talk to in terms of focusing on the achieving this bigger goal that we all set as a country in terms of what we want to get as an outcome, output of the education sector. Because you say yourself that the budget, you can't complain about the budget. Budget, 20% of the budget goes to education, so there is sufficient investment into it. But there's something that is not really going well in terms of realization of the investment that has been put into place. Unfortunately, you have to crack the whip. Somebody has to crack the whip to the department, and the department discuss it down to the. It can be an explanation. Now, I want to a little bit hear about this. What is to be done? Because the question that confronts, we all know the problem, but the actual solving the problem is what we need to do. The issue about the planning implementation, the construction, the cost factor, you know, I don't know in terms of the decentralization, including the decentralization that has taken place of construction, whether this department, that department manages its own processes. It produces results. It may be sitting in a better position to say it does, including the issues of the pricing aspect. Now, I don't know, you may have to say this is better. In your slide, you speak about new units that you're creating in terms of the reconfiguration of the department. Is it going to be money well spent? What does it do in terms of the budget itself? If you continue to create a top heavy without actual value for money, you probably can answer that question because you are best placed. Because more often than not, when we are unable to solve the problem, we create structures as a solution to the problem rather than dealing with the problem at the highest level. So you have then red tape that runs up and takes ages to come to where the actual decision has to be taken. And I'm asking, is that this model going to, if it's going to produce results, congratulations, we'd like to see when we meet next year. But the issue about the performance of expenditure, let me just say this thing about the backlog, 700 million additions that has been allocated to. Now, I mean, we're talking about Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape has been mentioned. I mean, we were in the Eastern Cape for more than a year ago. We found to send the report to the department to see what needed to be done in terms of basic, simple infrastructure, sanitation, water, and electricity. Well, you have it across the road, but on the school you don't have it. And it's here down the line, the money is there, but the work function is not being performed. And now maybe the Eastern Cape is a peculiar because there is a section whatever 100 that is now keeping there. But some of these things, management, simple thing that can be done. Can you give assurance that the 700 million that we're getting for the additional, this particular work, that when we come next year and when you go back next year to the Eastern Cape, to the very school that we have been to, that we'll find a different situation? That electricity will be there, the evolution block will be working with water, with flush toilets, and at least there would be the morale of teachers would improve because of the condition that they're working in. So is there then another, I think there's a technical secondary recapitulation grant. It has not been performing well. Now I think maybe you could also share light in terms of what are the problem that it for it not to perform. It has not been the last, all the quarters has not been performing well. Linked to that, This earmark funding, you said the 20% that's where you are. Are you going to be able to spend it by the time we come to the end of the financial year? Or are we going to be confronted with a call to roll over, to roll it over because we have not been able to spend it? Do we have the balls and nuts for us to be able to do that, or are we going to dump it? Because it's a whole thing that happens here. We can see clearly that at the end of the financial year, there's a rush to put the money somewhere. Not quite spend, but transfer, as to show that in the budget you are clean, you are spending 99% of the budget as allocated. So what is it to be done in terms of the solving the problem of the Eastern Cape? Education... So, the last question is this one. I did ask this yesterday to the minister that perhaps somebody must create the work in order for this to happen. But maybe you can't because of the separation. Are you having an integrated provincial forum that unblocks the blockages with respect to this, what is needed to be done in terms of the particularly the infrastructure issue, basic infrastructure, that periodically, with whatever interval, you are able to unblock the blockages that takes place in there in terms of your whatever you call it, whether it's an institutional arrangement of the department or the provinces, to unblock these blockages. That's the few questions. But do you think it is a cartel operating in this pricing aspect for construction industry, particularly worried about the prices, the way it's escalating for a school to a square meter of a school is equal to a house? I mean, do you think there's something strange operating in here? Because I think something must be done around to get to the bottom of it in terms of material cost and cost to schools. Thanks, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, honourable members. We really very much under pressure with time. PG, I think that there are challenges. I just want to go back to the questions that honourable Kulisi asked about the police saving. But mine is not really about the saving. I think the question that she was referring to is on page 125 of the adjusted estimates of national expenditure, if you have any copy. But if you don't have a copy, I do have it for you. Okay. Sure. That's correct. Section 43, you know, we have this Section 43 of the Public Finance Management Act, which is, I think that is a section that all of us needs to have an understanding exactly as to, it will check if we have the same understanding. Section 43 is about the environment between divisions within the roads. I notice here that there's machinery happening from page 124, 125, where there has been environments from resources that are for machinery and equipment to goods and services, and then it is the same pay is the same to cover shortfalls for goods and services. But if you look at the PFMA, PFMA says
it allows that environment. But the sections 43-4 says this section does not authorize the utilization of a saving in an amount blah 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 blah. And then 4C says this section does not authorize the utilization of a saving in an amount appropriated for capital expenditure in order to defray current or to call it, expenses. Now, what I want, I need to know is that in this case, clearly, this has happened. I don't know if then this section of the public finance management was taken into account. But also coming to your presentation today, just on slide 21, I think it's a project that has been given to DBSA to run for these 50 schools. I'm not sure. I know Mr. Padiachi, was it this year or late last year? In April this year, when we discussed this matter, we asked you over and over, do you think that you will be able to build the 50 schools? He insisted, and I don't know if today we'll be able to say how many of these 50 schools have been built. And now we see that in that slide, phase one, 28 schools out of the initial 50 schools. I don't know whether this phase, these 50 schools have been built, but phase two, 22, I just don't understand the slide. I would need more clarity. But this issue, I think that I really congratulate you for appointing Ms. Diaz to have a project, someone in the water quality department to do it. A lot of questions have been saying here. What if this is not in your hands? Because you give this over to the provinces to do it. But, experience shows that provinces have not been able to do it. Now, what do we do about it? You know, I don't know if sometimes as peers you look at best practices sometimes. I think for us we do. I know that Department of Health, they have established an infrastructure office under Dr. Sharma. And clearly, everybody must comply with those instructions. And I think that in health, I think that there is a gradual, what you call, improvement. Maybe even with education, I'm of the view that just the first step of establishing that office maybe is a move towards that. I think there should be. Because clearly, Honorable Singh says we're going to have, we will continue with these inequalities if something is not done. Now, how do we really ensure that the money that is meant to build the schools will, be able to achieve this building of the schools? Let alone what Honorable Swart is saying about not complying with anything. From the reading from the report of the auditor general, the constitution says we are a unitary state.
But session 3 of the Constitution, is it session 3? That talks about cooperative government. Maybe the Department of Cooperative Governance can tell us better. But section 3, I mean, talks about this cooperative governance. I mean, chapter 3, sorry, thank you. Now, but I mean, what we do if you set these are the priorities of governance. And I think that you started well, T.G. You said there were 10 priorities, one for national government, 9 for the rest of the 10 provinces. But now, at least we have trimmed that up to 1. Maybe it's a first step so that we all move from one from one understanding this one line. They say here in other circles, this is a line. Other people will tell you that if you deviate, there are consequences. These consequences. What do we do if I'm responsible for this in province A, it is not happening. Unfortunately, everybody is happy about the Eastern Cape. I'm sorry, Eastern Cape, wherever you are listening. So we don't intend to, you know, you're not the only province in South Africa. There are 8 other provinces. But unfortunately, things are happening there. What do we do? Are we really powerless? I think that the public finance management does not say that we're powerless. It says that we have the public finance management says that we're not powerless. People have got to be accountable, failing which Section 81. Now, by this section, they talk about financial misconduct, but but generally, I mean, if people don't do their work, how much of the kind of powers we have to deal with them, I'll come to that. Because I don't think that one person, so if the person doesn't deal with the work, Mr. Singh says, for instance, and that is the powers you have in terms of the business revenue, if province A doesn't perform, you take the money away. There's no stress. But this continues, it means that that province will continue to have that kind of a situation because we're not dealing with the problem. We're not dealing with the cause. You know, we take the money away, everybody suffers because the person responsible is not dealing with the problem. How do we... maybe we're asking a question that we should be asking ourselves. As Parliament, that do we really say it's fine if you don't spend in your province, it's your business, we're taking the money away, and you lose nothing, but these resources are meant for beneficiaries in those provinces, and they will continue to occur to some. I don't think that we should, as Parliament, say, no, it's fine, the money is taken away. It can't end like that. The person, if it's an individual, must be made, must account for that. But I think that from our side, you really have our support. You know, are we really in trouble? It's 11:30. Got about the copter, is it copter? I'm not sure what it's copter, the copter or what was supposed to start the presentation. Peter, I would really like you to maybe just to summarize some of the questions. Mr. Phil?
Yeah, Chair, I know we are out of time, but maybe what the lead can do is summarize. But I think we need a fuller engagement with basic education early next year, when this unit is up and running, when you know what's happening, when we're in the fourth quarter and that kind of thing. A real, maybe a whole day, even before this parliament starts, this, you know, the 9th of February, or maybe soon after, but something that we can reach an agreement with. Because, like you said, 20 or 30% of the budget is education, you know, infrastructure problems, all this. And I think the problem is not theirs alone. It requires a cooperation of other departments, other ministers. I mean, if ministers are not attending interviews and you don't have DDGs, I mean, that's sad. Then they must appoint deputy ministers or ask us to go and interview them. You know, something, you can't just leave it hanging. So maybe a further interaction. Next step.
Yeah, now I think that Mr. Saft is correct. We are separate arms of government, but I don't think that we are mutually, because we have to operate mutually exclusive from one another. We're there to support one another. I think where Parliament can intervene, I know Parliament can intervene some, because we want the Department to succeed. But over to you, Tucci. You 10 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Mr. Chairperson. I've given some of the major pressing issues. I'll hand over to the CFO and Mr. Pagliacci on the specific ones which are important, especially the environment issues that you raised, and we must clarify that. And then I'd really like to plead for it to come back in relation to some of those other ones. In relation to the environment issues, the CFO will address that one. An issue came up here about the pricing and about whether I think there's collusion amongst providers. As an accounting officer and a public servant, I can only go by facts. I don't have any facts to point to collusion. So that must be my emphatic response. I don't have before me any evidence to suggest collusion or any impropriety in that regard. What the facts do suggest to me is that there's an unusual escalation of price. And that matter we need to investigate. So I agree, it's serious. I made that point and we certainly will look into it. On the other issues about value for money, one of the chair about whether in fact our plans are going to make a difference. The action plan is there and speaks to very specific interventions, targets and so forth. It's a very detailed document. It's not something I can do justice to, even if we have time now. So I suggest when we come back, we deal with the infrastructure spending issues. But we also have time to talk about the how that you raised and other honourable members raised. How do we address these challenges in the system? Because we've done a lot of work on that. And I think next year will be a very appropriate time to address that. In relation to the interprovincial thing, governance, cooperative governance, etc., and the question about whether if it's ended to national, can national manage. Let me say that it varies. In some instances, you have very strong cooperative governance. In other instances, you're not. When you don't have a good cooperative governance, it's not necessarily because people don't want to or are not committed to it. It could be because of administrative, bureaucratic implementation failures. And these are things you've got to deal with. We've created MINMAX at a technical level, at a political level to address that, and various committees. The question was whether we have an integrated committee for infrastructure with provinces. We do. We have a steering committee where not only provinces are represented, the infrastructure people, but all the implementing agents, then Public Works, DDSA, Treasury, etc., sit on it as well. In addition, we have a committee of heads of department, and we have a committee of MECs with the minister, where these things are dealt with. In addition, the steering committee also, from time to time, would facilitate input into what we call the 10x10 between Treasury and the basic education sector. So there are various structures that address this thing. The other question was whether our unit in the department is simply adding layers. The answer to that is no. If you read the AG's report that was referred to, I think, by Mr. Swart, it raises very specific issues there, which requires stronger national oversight and intervention. And that's what the technical unit will do. So that matter, we believe, will address the question of those capacity problems that were raised there. Honourable Chair, just in closing, in terms of the big issues, you said, you know, are we hamstrung in cooperative governance, or is there more provision? You're right. In law, if you take the PFMA, you take the Constitution. In Intergovernment Relations Act. There's a lot of provisions there which provide statutory mechanisms. But beyond that, we have codified from the Constitution certain provisions which allows for cooperative governance in the National Education Policy Act. And that provides statutory mechanisms for monitoring what provinces do, hold them accountable, and intervene when necessary. However, as we're finding now with Eastern Cape, and we find in other examples, it's fine to have the provisions in law. To operationalize that raises huge challenges. For one, the national department's not structured to do that. We took on Eastern Cape as an add-on, and it's raining for all of us, including me as a DG. Yet I've got my job to do. Now, to replicate that across nine other provinces, it shows that we don't have that capacity that's contemplated should something go wrong, as provided for in the legislation. So it's something we need to work on as government. And I think the point about cooperation between the different parts of government is important to try and give effect to that. We try and we work hard to try and invoke and apply those mechanisms, but it doesn't always make a difference. So with that, Honorable Chair, to you, I'm going to hand over first to the CFO and then to the Premier Chief.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Member. With regard to savings and the shifting of funds, the funds are shifted within the requirements of the PSMA and trial regulations. However, there's that big shift that was indicated on page 125. That had to do with the construction of the building. When we were given the money for the building, at the time it was put under one line item. Now we are clearer on where the amount should be shifted to, the different items, but it's still within the same program. We did not shift out of the program. And shifting between programs, we stick within the required percentages. And that's why we said it was incorrectly classified. And then with regard to savings and under expenditure, there as well, as the DG explained in the opening remarks, that the department was reorganized. So funds were shifted from the units that did not exist anymore to where they were best needed. And then with regard to slides 6 and 7, the difference there is that one of the slides does not include the main appropriations, but all the other items are the same. I think I've covered everything under.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will address quickly the slide you referred to. That slide indicates that as of this week, as of the 14th, the Budget Adjudication Committee had met to deal with the 28 schools that were put out to tender by DBSA, and those tenders are being awarded over the week of 18 to the 21st. So the construction will take place, and as part of the contract, building will continue during the festive season, and we're targeting the 31st of March for completion of that, of the 28th, and then the 22 will also be out in December. We're now moving towards the 31st.
You know, Mr. President, you don't stop amazing me, you know. You really don't stop. Things are very easy for you, very, very simplified. We'll start today, tomorrow we're done, March.
No, let us be real. Let us be now in the real world now. Let us be now in the real world now. Since you started in March, you presented to us out of the city schools, how many schools have been completed and where are those schools? Can you get a report on that? Where are those schools that out of the 50 have been completed? Since you presented to us, was it in March, April? Yes. Where are those schools? Because I think that we simplify these things too much. And you know, I've got the water card here, and I don't want to use this thing. I mean, I've got the power of privileges and immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act. We do not want to use it. I really don't want to use it. I'm serious now. Please, let us be serious.
think long, we don't want to use this act. We can use it.
How many schools will be finished by
31st of March next year? The 28 schools will have been built by 21st of March next year. But the question that I'm asking, you say you requested to us in April that 50 schools were built this year, and you said that's not possible, that it was possible. Now the question is, how many of those schools have been built, and where are those schools?
Okay, the answer is none.
Sorry?
The answer is none, no, to your question.
Okay.
That is the question that we raise with you. That's why I'm raising this act, because we don't want people to come and tell us things that are unrealistic. So we want people to be frank. So that I said we are different arms of government, but we're there to support one another. But once we feel that here it is being undermined, it's something else. We have to deal with that situation. It's not that we're powerless.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Look, in terms of the plans currently, the projection is that by the end of the financial year, the 50 schools will be constructed. The process is underway. None of them have been constructed yet. But according to what the DBSA, the technical team, and so forth have assessed, is that this is doable in the time frame. Some of the delays we've had in the planning is that when we put the teams together and we put the specs together and so forth, largely, the schools are to be constructed in a province where we were requested to ensure that job creation happens. We have classified CIDB, which was too high. They requested that we reduce that CIDB in order, because they said that if we leave it at the point where we impacted, none of the local providers will be able to participate. Those are some examples that contributed to the problem. What also contributed to the problem is when we did get this in, they were exorbitant, and we needed to find ways to deal with that. So, Honourable Chairperson, the original plans presented have shifted because of these factors and other factors which we can provide details on writing. However, the current assessment, based on DBSA, in response to questions exactly in the manner you've posed them, both from myself and from the Minister, have indicated to us that these are the dates that are feasible in terms of the provision.
I wonder if we could have a 2-minute presentation by the head of the PSU of what are the plans. I mean, is the PSU a unit of one person, say, or are there more people, and what are the plans of moving forward? So that by the time we meet the next time, we know if some of those objectives have been achieved through the DG.
Well, Madam Chair, just a small follow-up with respect to the 50 schools. They will be completed in this financial year, let's accept that. But at what cost? What is the cost per unit in terms of this? It is 100 million that you refer to, at what cost? You say that you have done, you have really looked at it. What is the cost that you're talking about in that?
But this is, tell me, where are we now? As far as this issue of the 50 schools is concerned, if we say by March they will be completed, and we think that come the festive season the people will not be there, I just want us to be the realistic, you know. Where are we now?
At the moment, the DBSA is in the process of selecting and appointing providers. The scoping has been done. They've laid down a condition that work only people who can work over the festive season must put in bids, and that was the condition for consideration. So based on that, the guarantee they're giving us is end of March that it can be done. These schools in scope.
I don't want to be with you, to move with you step by step. What is it that can be done by end of March?
The completion of these 50 schools that have been identified as part of the total mud structures in the Eastern Cape. That's the first thing.
I don't intend really to engage with you like this. Even Mr. Padiaki to say,
or you have said, now, in November, the 16th, no building has started of any of the 50 schools. We're still going to go to service providers and blah, blah, blah. But the schools will be completed by the 31st of March. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Honourable Chair, that's what the implementing agent, based on all these factors. And look, they started work, because part of the process was the scoping, identification, the plans, etc. So plans have been designed already. What happens here is that when the providers come in, they get plans already. They don't start drawing up plans. So that reduces the lead time. They hit the ground with building. The ground has been checked, it's been assessed and so forth. That's been done already in respect of the 50 schools. So they reassured us based on that technical assessment, which is why we outsourced it to DBSA. We don't have the capacity for that. That will be done by the end of March.
So if you are hitting me, I'd like to take a few ways of hit
Now, I did ask what the price factor of the school. Now, I'm hearing that it is normal that the industry closes on the 14th of December, most of the industries, including the one that supplies the materials. Do I take it that there's already agreement with those industries that they would not necessarily close? There will be material available for you throughout the process. So that's already been agreed.
My understanding is that the agreement is with the service providers. I'm not sure with the industry. I'm not sure how practical is that. That's what I can.
If I can respond to that, that's a condition of the BERT, which means it includes the material, includes working through that period. So if they don't comply with that, they are in breach of the contract. In terms of the cost for this 400 million, when we priced the 400 million in the number of schools, it was based on an assessment of per square cost, and it's not the inflated cost that we're talking about. So in other words, we will not commit to that inflated cost because of desperation that they want to push us into. We'll invoke contingency measures to make sure that the costs are more realistic for government.
We're living off
the
Are these honourable members chairing now? Because I thought you gave me the space. Are they chairing the session? No, I wanted just to say, Chair, the small question that maybe it would be useful that the department could finish with this guarantee that they have, including this guarantee of the material that is going to be available throughout the process, so that at least we have it as a department, because we're going to get back to this issue.
Our understanding is that 700 million comes from the funds that were allocated. So clearly, you correct me. I don't think that there were plans for it now.
The 700 million is for what we're talking about, the ACD. Part of that is for the school infrastructure. The other one is for services, water, sanitation, etc. So about 400 million goes for school construction. The rest goes for water, sanitation, etc. The school construction is exclusively Eastern Cape. The rest is Eastern Cape and some other provinces as well. But that's what the 700 million is for. The backlog's grant.
So you say the planning for it is there. Okay, we will we'll meet again in the paper next year during the appropriation. But other members, all the questions, are not there.
appreciate it. Well, I don't want to happen to the department because I really do believe that they are sincere in what they're wanting to achieve. But I don't want them to be misled by the DBSA when they've now brought in internal capacity to be able to analyze what the DBSA is telling you in terms of what is practically possible. So to protect yourselves, I think utilize your own inner skill to let them analyze to say that it's actually practical. So you don't put yourself in a position with this committee next year. And once you've done that, write to the chairperson or write to the committee and let us understand that analysis. Because depending how the department has pushed down your initial certification of the builder that you wanted to choose. You have to turn over $2 million odd a month for a small company. It's dangerous in itself, and they can run into cash flow. So just those kind of issues, I think you're putting yourselves in a corner based on what they're telling you. Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Snare. But I think that I would like us to conclude now. If you have concluding remarks, you may conclude so that you, at least you can conclude.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think the discussion was very useful for us. It's clear we're aware we're under pressure. We're aware that, especially on the city, the pressure is enormous and the time frames are tight. We will endeavor to make sure that we manage DBSA in the manner that will try and ensure that the delivery happens. We will also take up the offer to communicate in writing with this committee in the meantime, immediately after today, just to ensure that we keep you apprised. And we've got to strike a balance between our imperative as a government for job creation and local providers and the imperative to deliver. That's been a big issue for us here, Honourable Chairperson, and I must put that on the table. And we'll have to ensure that delivery, at least in this financial year, is a major priority. When I leave here, I'm going to go somewhere else, I'm going to get ready to attack because I'm not bringing the local providers here correctly. The issue of delivery is important, and it's a matter we've got to reconcile. I appreciate that. So we're aware of the seriousness, and we're aware of the injunction of this committee, and we will address it accordingly. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thank you, DG. I think that the other issue that we really need to look at is what Honourable Soft has raised in terms of, I'm sure you are aware of the report of the Auditor General with respect to infrastructure. A number of particular commissions have been committed there. But clearly, we hope that, we don't know that with the establishment of your own infrastructure unit, it's going to be able to address it. But we hope that it will go a long way, because I think that it will be important to look at this report, you know, and maybe the scope another thing, we'll ask them what they want in turn doing, but it also has an interest because, this report has also been brought to us as members of parliament to say these are the commissions, and we would have an interest in saying how the department or department's concerned going to address this, so that next time we don't go back and find the same mistake that they've been committed already.
I think engineering can give some feedback on that report.
If you could invite us.
I think
so. Well, okay. Communication is here. Thank you very much, DJ. And my apologies to Professor Mwira.
Thank you. Okay.